Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated, non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio.
Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we talk about the MIAC best women's soccer team. We break down the football team's heartbreaking loss to St. John's over the weekend. Then we sit down with Tommy running back Josh Parks and discuss the football game against Carleton next weekend.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on KTBR, Keep the Ball Rolling, the only Tommy Media podcast 4 out of 5 doctors recommend. The other one probably hasn't listened. And this is the only Tommy Media podcast, so they don't have much else to listen to. Anyway, I'm Noah Brown. I'm joined here by my co-host Brady Halbmeyer and our producer Althea Larson. Brady, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. The loss this weekend hurts. It still stings. The warm weather today, we finally saw the sun for the first time in like 4 months. So that's helping.
Althea, we know you're not much of a sports person. How much does this Tommy Johnny loss weigh on you?
You know, it just kind of makes me feel a little embarrassed at times when people bring up the game. I may not be a huge know-it-all with football, but, you know, you're still Tommy. You still get a little heartbroken and a little embarrassed when stuff like that happens.
It'd be inhuman if you weren't upset by that loss. That was devastating.
Very devastating. Didn't see it coming. We've been playing, did not see that coming.
Well, and you look, the first play from scrimmage, too, or not the first play from scrimmage, but the first score, Josh Parks takes a run 94 yards to the house. At that point, it felt like it was going to be another blowout, but the other way, where St. Thomas is playing a team that should be a close game, but they blow them out.
Like, it felt like the Concordia-Moorhead game up in Moorhead, you know, where it's two really good football teams playing against each other, and St. Thomas just plays better and blows them out.
Exactly.
Gets up, you know, we get up 7-0 early, and it had every feeling like we were going to just take this and run with it, but... you know, 7 turnovers is hard to overcome.
Yeah, no, they're the only time I've seen another team have that many turnovers was St. Thomas 2 years ago in the quarterfinal against Wisconsin Oshkosh, and we lost that game as well. You cannot have that many turnovers and win a game.
Yeah, and that game we had the ball with the last drive against Oshkosh. We had the ball with a chance to win even with 8 turnovers. This game, this time around against St. John's, we had no chance of winning. And really goes down to the play where the fumble, we'll talk about it later with Josh Parks, the contentious fumble that may or may not have been a fumble. But let's talk a little women's soccer before we get back to football. They've won 13 in a row. Mallory DeBoom scored another goal. They are really, really hot right now.
Yeah, this team is really starting to click. And I think something that doesn't get as much coverage, or something that I haven't heard a lot about but I think should be, you know, hearing a lot more about, ever since the first game, so that's what, August 31st against Wheaton, when they lost 2-0, St. Thomas has not allowed more than one goal in any game. And they've allowed that one goal 4 times. So in this win streak, they've only allowed 4 scores to
that
other
is
teams.
Incredible.
Which is insane. The goalkeepers are doing incredible work. And this defense, too. When you win 13 games in a row, obviously everyone's playing really well. But I think the defense and the goalkeepers or goaltenders in soccer?
I think it's goalkeeper because like on the position, on the roster it says GK.
Okay.
GK, that's got to be goalkeeper.
Okay.
And the goalie is Olivia Elvidge. Mm-hmm. Elvidge. She's got the second highest save percentage in the MIAC. She's saving like 87% of the goals, or 87% of the shots on goal. You said it. She's playing phenomenally well, and the big reason why they've won so many in a row.
And in the last 4 games she's played, she has blocked every shot and has not allowed a single goal. And I think that percentage, St. Thomas rotates goalies too. And so I think she had one game where she allowed one goal, and that, you know, brought her percentage down. Other than that, she's not allowed a goal all season.
And what helped on Saturday, the Tommies get a win to stay undefeated in the MIAC. And the two closest pursuers in St. Kate's and St. Olaf both lost their second loss in the MIAC this season, you know, separating St. Thomas by now 2-game margin. Other than Bethel, I think Bethel might have one loss in the MIAC. let's see, yeah, Bethel's got one loss, Augsburg's got two, and St. Olaf's got two, but St. Thomas is breaking away from the pack in women's soccer.
Yeah, and we haven't seen a really dominant soccer team at St. Thomas since 3 years ago with the men's team that went to national playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that team, just in all facets of the game, played really well and played really smart soccer. And I think this women's team is the first team we've seen since then who has kind of embodied that fundamental soundness and that explosiveness, both on offense and on defense.
They got four games left. They play Concordia Moorhead on Wednesday, and then they finish the season with St. Olaf, Augsburg, and Bethel, the next three teams in the MIAC standings behind St. Thomas. So they'll have a tough test at the end of the season here and hopefully get them ready, the 16th-ranked squad, for the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I think just the way they've been playing, they're already ready. I mean, they're already ready. That's a tongue twister. but no, that's I think they're ready to go for the playoffs. And these last four games that they have before the postseason should just stand to sharpen their skills, hone their abilities before they go. I've got complete confidence in this team that they'll go far in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Sheila McGill's got her squad rolling. Yeah. It'll be fun to watch them come here late October and into November. Getting back to a little football. So the Tommies lose in Collegeville. If you live under a rock and you didn't see that, the Tommies lost 40-20. The Tommies had a chance in the fourth quarter. They were down, I think it was 20-33.
It was 33-20.
33-20, yeah. We're down with about 11 minutes to go in the game. On the one-yard line, about to punch it in for a touchdown. We give it to Josh Parks, and the ball is knocked out. It's a sweep to the right. His knee hit the ground. It looked like, to me anyway, his knee hit the ground, and then the ball was popped out. The St. John's player just picked it up and ran with it 99 yards, and they called it a touchdown.
Yeah. Well, I was standing, unfortunately, I was on the other side of the end zone from where I was taking photos. But I've got the big telephoto lens on, so you're looking through it, and you can see pretty clearly, someone who's, 50 yards away from you. And I'm not a trained person. I'm not looking for these kinds of things. I come from it more from a fan perspective rather than a referee perspective. Mm-hmm. But even me, from not the best angle, on the other side of the field, to me, it looked like Josh was down. Mm-hmm. He was down. That should not have been a fumble. And who knows? I mean, the way St. Thomas was playing all game long, you can't say definitively, if they scored there, they would have come back and won, but at least they would have had a better shot. Where that fumble recovery for the touchdown, that went 99 yards to the house. And anytime you get a long score like that on the defensive side of the ball, that is just such a huge deflator for the other team.
Especially on the road.
Exactly. And, St. Thomas has already played a sloppy game. They weren't looking real good on either side of the ball. But when you're down, you've got a shot. Had they punched that in there, that might have been the shift they needed to win. However, that fumble recovery, 99 yards, that was the final nail in the coffin. As soon as that happened, one of our video people was up there as well. I turned to her and I was like, yeah, we're done. This is over. There's still 10 minutes left, but there's no way St. Thomas can come back from that.
And credit to the St. John's safety, Max Johnson, who picked up the football and ran with it for 99. That's, a Caruso thing. Caruso used to say and still does say, act as if he wasn't down. And credit to Max Johnson. He did that. He acted as if Parks wasn't down, and he took it to the house, and he put the pressure on the referee to make that call. Instead of just stopping, he put the pressure to say, blow your whistle, call the play dead. There's no review in Division III football.
No.
The stakes are, the ref has to make a split-second decision. This kid's running the other way. Do I blow him dead or not? Well, he's still going. The ref is thinking, he's still going. Let's not blow it dead. Let's just play it out, unfortunately. After looking at the film and after hearing some of the football guys on Sunday, we'll see what Park says, but it sounds like he was down pretty definitively.
And it really sucks because that was one of the two kind of dampers on a career day from Josh Parks. He ran for 256 yards and three touchdowns, both career highs. He was having a monster day on a monster season. I mean, this was, up until the season, he's kind of been battling for a roster spot with guys like Tucker Treadle, Jordan Roberts. Mm-hmm. With Treadle injured, Roberts graduated, this has been his season to really shine, and he has. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's already almost to 1,000 yards rushing through six games. Obviously, having 256 yards in one game is going to help that quite a bit. But yeah, he was just playing really, really well. And you saw in other games before the kind of the animosity that he ran with. When he lowered his shoulder on that run with the fumble, I thought for certain that was going to be a touchdown because you've seen in other plays before where similar thing, guys coming at him, Parks levels him and just trucks right through him on the 1 yard line too. Even if he was starting to get tackled, he would have fallen forward into the end zone. Right. I thought for sure that he would have scored there.
His arms are like the size of my head when he like lays down his shoulder, you know, puts his shoulder down and lays into somebody. More times than not, he's winning that battle. Yeah.
Well, there was a play, I believe it was against Concordia, where it was a big run that he had, and there was a guy who tried to tackle him. So that was up on one 30-yard line. I'm across the field on the other 30-yard line. So do your trigonometry, whatever it is, however far away that is.
I failed that class. So.
I didn't do too well in that either. But it was a long way. Lowered the boom on this guy, and you could hear it from not only like the pads colliding and his shoulder going to this guy's chest, but the of the guy like taking it into his shoulder and like losing the air as he went down. Like that hurt. It looked like it hurt, and you had to believe that guy had like a big bruise in his sternum right there.
Yeah, Parks, he is a violent runner, as you said. He's leading the MIAC in touchdowns with 12 this so far. He's averaging 140 yards a game. He puts up 250 yards and 3 touchdowns on a top 10 defense in St. John's that is holding opponents to, I think, before going into that game, they're holding opponents to less than 6 points a game. He puts up 3 touchdowns on his own. Josh had a great day. You take away one or two plays, you know, and it's probably looking a lot different, maybe for the team, definitely for Parks, but we'll get his take on the game here in a minute.
Yeah, other than Parks, I mean, you know, he was the only time he scored, so you can't really just say other than Parks.
Yeah, like I guess, yeah.
But, I mean, Jock Para passed for, you know, career-high yardage in the game, but had the 5 picks. The defense, they allowed the most points they had since the 2015 Stag Bowl when they allowed 49 to Mount Union. Yep. But on 4 of the 7 turnovers that the Tommies had, that allowed St. John's to start at least at the 50. There was one that started at the 50 and 3 that started on their on the Tommy's 35 to 40-yard line. So they were put in terrible situations, and they actually – I think they handled it pretty well. I mean, St. John's was kind of running through them, but there's only so much you can ask your defense to do.
Yeah, the secondary was kind of getting eaten up, 470 passing yards. They had a tough day. And that's going to be, you know, we talk about the offensive line being key for the offense. For the defense, it's going to be the secondary. If they can, you know, clamp down defensively. And part of the problem was that they weren't able to get pressure like they've been able to get so quickly. You know, in some of these games we've seen against other MIAC teams that aren't as good, our defensive linemen and our linebackers are getting to the quarterback so fast that, you know, the quarterback doesn't have any time to throw down the ball down the field. On Saturday, he had some time to throw down the field, and some of his guys were wide open.
Yeah, Erdman had all day to throw on a lot of his passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was held to 28 of 53, so attempted 53 passes, only completed 28 of them, but threw for 470 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, you can't allow that to happen. And particularly, Will Gillock, his lead receiver, had 256 yards by himself.
Yeah.
Without that pressure, it exposed the St. Thomas secondary, who, in my opinion, has been one of the weaker units since I've been here, you know, for 3 or 4 years. Not to say they're bad, but it's just they, when compared to the front 7, just not nearly the same high-level intensity of play.
Yeah, and that'll be the focus of this defense is, are they going to be able to lock down receivers downfield? Are they going to find a corner or a safety that can go up against the next Will Gillich? Or if we play them, we might play them again. We probably will if we get to the playoffs. If we can find somebody that can lock down a top receiver, we could go, the sky's the limit. Yeah.
Well, and you look a couple weeks ago against Augsburg as well, or last week against Augsburg, Nikini, however you say his last name, went off against the Tommies, had 100 and some yards and 2 touchdowns. And so even in games where another team's getting blown out, our secondary is still getting exposed. And they don't have much more time before playoffs roll around, and you're facing teams with high-level, high-octane offenses who pass a lot. This is the first time when they're playing St. John's that they really faced a spread offense.
Yeah.
And a lot of the top teams in Division III run the spread, and that really isolates every single defensive back. You have a lot of one-on-one matchups, not a lot of safety help in these spread offenses. And so the Tommies need to fix this, and they need to fix this soon if they're going to have any chance of making a deep run in this year's playoffs.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, let's get to the interview with Josh Parks. Here it is.
We now welcome on the show senior running back Josh Parks. Josh, thanks for taking time out of your day to join us down here.
Thanks for having me on.
Cool. So We'll start with the elephant in the room. 40-20 loss to St. John's. That's got to suck.
Yeah, that one's tough. You know, we had a couple opportunities late in the game to make it a close game, and we failed to do so. So that one's difficult to handle. But like all good teams, you got to come back from that and move on. It's one game out of many. So hopefully we can come back a little bit stronger next time.
Let's talk about the play on the 1 yard line. I think it's everyone's kind of thinking about it, at least from the St. Thomas side. I've heard from all the football players that I've talked to that saw the film on Sunday that you were down. Were you down on the 1 yard line?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, but at the end of the day, I can't put it in the ref's hands. You know, that's, you know, it's my job to hold onto the ball, and I didn't do it. So, you know, you're up at St. John's, Collegeville. You know, this is a great atmosphere. It's sort of a bang-bang play, so I can't expect the refs to, you know, call it, you know, in our favor, especially being up there. So I got to do a better job.
Did Caruso on Sunday give it as an example, as act as if? act as if he actually, Max Johnson picked up the ball and ran it? Did he use
that? Yeah, I mean,
he talks
about that kind of stuff a lot. Yeah. But, you know, my mind was just, you know, focused on getting better. So, you know, that's kind of where it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So... you had a couple of the – so the fumble, which, you know, may or may not have been a fumble, but it counted as a fumble. And then there was also the bobbled pass that wound up as the interception. You got a couple of those, but then also a career day, you know, your highest rushing yard total, 256, in your career here at St. Thomas, also 3 touchdowns in a game. When you look back at the St. John's game, what sticks out in your mind more, that fumble and the bobbled pass, or the monster day you had against their defense?
I missed the fumble, definitely. You know, if we would have came out with a win, I think that I would probably look at it differently. I think everyone probably would have. But when you commit turnovers like that, especially as a running back, when your team, you know, kind of wants you to kind of be the focal point, you know, it's hard to look past those kind of things. So, we did good things on offense and on defense. But, you know, when you commit turnovers like that, I mean, that's kind of what sticks in your head at the end of the day.
What was the kind of the vibe of the team on Sunday and then today, your first practice Tuesday? We're recording after your practice Tuesday night here. So what was kind of the feel of the team these last few days?
After the game, it was – I don't want to say that we were down, but, you know, it was definitely a different feeling than we've had in the past.
Yeah.
You know, but Sunday was sort of similar to that. But now coming back, it's a new week. You know, at some point you got to move on. So, you know, we're trying to get back in the groove of things. Getting back to work, you know, so hopefully it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, this is the kind of unfamiliar territory. This is the first conference loss in the regular season that, you know, the seniors have experienced their entire time here.
Yeah.
Last conference loss was October 25th, 2014 to Bethel. Your first regular season loss since last season against Wisconsin Stout. You've only lost 2 regular season games in your time here. Is it weird losing? Like, how do you deal with it? You don't deal with it very often. Does that make it worse or better that you don't experience this very often?
In with my time being here, I think, you know, I look back at the St. John's game. I look back at the Oshkosh game. We had 7 turnovers this game. I think we had, 7 or 8 turnovers in the Oshkosh game.
Yeah.
So, you look back and, any loss is difficult to handle, but you look back at those losses and it's like, you know, if we only turn the ball over 5 times, what happens? So there's just a lot of what-ifs, right? And obviously it's not, never good to play that game, but I feel like the games that we have lost when I've been here came with a lot of turnovers and some that we don't regularly do, so that makes it difficult.
Is there much of an added pressure? How much of an added pressure do you think there is knowing that you're going to have to probably win out in the regular season to make the playoffs?
There's no more pressure than any time before. I mean, a lot of people going into the season, we were ranked 2 or 3 or whatever it was. People are always going to have high expectations for us. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have the highest expectations for, like, our team in general out of anyone. And we expect to win out. So whether now that we have to or, being 5-0 or whatever we were before this game, it's all the same. We come to work and we understand what we can do. So you just got to execute.
Are you hoping that there can be a Tojo rematch here in the playoffs in a couple weeks?
If there is, we'll be ready.
Yeah, that'd be
sure.
That'd be pretty fun to go back to Collegeville.
So you've got 4 games left remaining. Is there one that the team is not obviously, you know, anytime we talk to Caruso or any of the football players, it's always, you know, next week is the only game we're focused on. But is there one that kind of sticks out on the schedule I'm reading? Because what, it's St. Olaf, Bethel, Carleton, and Gustavus, I believe, who are remaining. Is there one team who you think, I don't know, whether you get some sort of redemption from the loss at St. John's, or is there just one in particular that you're looking forward to?
Honestly, I mean, I don't want to sound cliche, but it literally is all of them. Like you said, we have to, you know, we understand what we have to do in order to get to the point where we want to at the end of the season. So we can't overlook, you know, any team, right? So it's literally day in and day out. We have to get better, you know, or else we probably won't get to where we want to. So we can't overlook any team. We can't overlook any week. We just got to continue to come together as a team.
Was it hard to – you've played on the team for a couple of years now, and you've sat behind some really, really good running backs, Jordan Roberts and Tucker Treadle, who's – Jordan Roberts moved on. Tucker Treadle's hurt right now. Was it hard to wait for your time? I mean, this is kind of your time now, but was it really hard to wait for that?
I wouldn't necessarily say so. I mean, like you said, they're really good backs, and I think that we fed off each other a great deal. Obviously, you want to get in and play right away, but that's not always the reality of it.
Yeah.
But as a competitor, you want to get out there, but you understand that, you know, when your time comes, just take it the opportunity. You know, and I think that, like, look at Tom Loeffler. I mean, the running back behind me. I mean, whenever he gets in, you know, he's electric with the ball, jumping over people, great punt return. I mean, so he's kind of in that same situation. But I think the system works well for running backs here.
Kind of on the flip side, did you feel any pressure? I mean, Jordan Roberts, arguably one of the greatest backs in St. Thomas history, definitely of recent memory, particularly 2015, just had that monster season. It was, what, 32 touchdowns, 2,500 yards,
Yeah,
something
player
like that.
Of the year in college football. Yeah. Essentially the Heisman. I don't know what the actual name is, but essentially the Heisman of D3.
Yeah.
Now that you are the back, do you feel any pressure? It's like, okay, well, Jordan Roberts did this, you know, 2 years ago. Have a lot of great running backs in St. Thomas history. Do you feel like you have to live up to that at all?
No, not at all. I mean, you look at Jordan. If Jordan's in the room with me, we look completely different, right? I mean, that's a big back. He runs much differently than I do. I just want to win. You know, we've gotten very close to getting to where we wanted to go, and we haven't gotten there yet. So it's no more pressure than I put on myself, right? So, you know, I just want to win. That's what it comes down to.
Josh, you spent a year at the U of M. Was it your first year out of high school?
Yep.
So you spent your red shirt year there. What was that experience like?
That was good. That was really good. That's actually where I met Jacques.
Okay.
The quarterback here now. But, you know, it was a good opportunity. But in terms of, you know, what I wanted to do and my happiness and, you know, all the small things, you know, I knew that moving on would probably be a better thing to do. And Jacques actually came here first, met Caruso. He's like, Josh, you should talk to Caruso. And that's kind of how that all unfolded. But no, yeah, the U of M was great. You know, great people, great coaching staff.
Was it Clay's? Who was the coach?
No, but it was Kill. It was Kill at the time. Okay. Yeah, it was Kill at the time.
So were you there when that whole Kill thing kind of unfolded?
Yeah. That was scary. He was just, his health was, you know, sort of going down. And kind of did what he had to do, get out of it. You know, he's put in a lot of stressful situations. So.
So remind me, did he walk away? Did he like leave the team in the middle of the season, or what was the deal?
Yeah, so he left for like a short amount of time. I think it was his second time he collapsed on the sideline.
Yeah.
So
at the U, he had a bunch of other previous, but yeah, at the U, I think it was his second.
So he had a walk away, which was very, you know, a scary time.
Yeah.
I mean, you really never know what's gonna happen after that. That's a great man though. You know, he gave a lot to that university, and you know, he deserves everything that he has now.
Well, do you see any similarities between, you know, Coach Kill, Division I coach, and Coach Caruso?
Yeah, honestly, I talk about this sometimes. They both are very, they're in their ways, which is a good thing, Like, they understand what it takes to succeed. And that's awesome to have as a player standpoint. For me, I like to have a coach that says, all right, we have to do this, you have to do that. They hold you to extremely high standards. Coach Caruso, I mean, he talks about standards all the time.
Yeah.
And Kill was that same way. He expects a lot from whether you're a freshman or you're a senior. So that's awesome.
So was Caruso a big reason or a reason at all why you left the U to come here to St. Thomas?
Not necessarily at first. So once I left the U, I wasn't necessarily sure where I was going to go. I had a good friend that was playing quarterback at UND, so I went and looked there for a little bit. Looked at a couple other schools, but when I did meet Coach Caruso and actually sat down with him, and we had like an hour-long talk, after that, I was like, I'm coming here. I knew that at that point.
That's kind of been the theme. We talked to Fritz Waldvogel a couple weeks ago. He was committed to a school out in Holy Cross or something like that, and he said they had a four-hour sit-down with Caruso, and same thing. Yeah. Right after he was done with that, he's coming to St. Thomas.
Yeah.
What does he say to you in those meetings? Obviously, it's working. He's getting a lot of great players to come here. What does he say?
The big thing about him is that he's very honest with you. So in the recruiting process, you have to think about it from this standpoint. You're 16, 17. You're probably, one of the top players in your high school team. So a lot of coaches, they'll come to you or, you'll go to them and they'll tell you a lot of very good things, right? You'll start at this point, this and that. This is what you'll get, like all this sort of stuff, right? And Caruso is sort of the opposite. Like, he tells a lot of people, you probably won't play until your junior year. You won't be guaranteed this or that. But from a player standpoint, that caught me right away, because then I knew that if I went in there and just worked my butt off, I would have opportunities to get in and play, and nothing would be guaranteed to other players just because maybe they were better in high school or whatever it may be.
All right, I looked at some of your high school stats. You had 2,800 all-purpose, or I don't know if it was all, I might have been rushing yards, 2,800 yards in high school and 39 career touchdowns, just insane high school stats. But I'm going to give you a hypothetical here. If you could get one more year of college football next year, are you going to go on and play? Are you going to try to play after this, or is this going to be your last year?
We'll see. Okay. I still have time to think about that.
Okay, so we'll hold off on that. But if you get one more year of football, you can pick one year in high school or one year in college. Where would you go?
Oh, college. I'd have to pick college.
Yeah? Why?
It's different. High school, so high school is great because you play with your best friends growing up. But college is just a different element to it, right? Every game that you go into, everyone's good. The fan base is awesome. That's a tough question. That's a very hard question because they both are. I'm kind of being biased now because I'm in college right now.
If I had asked you in high school, you probably would have said scoring 39 touchdowns, I'm staying here.
So I don't know. They both are fun. But like I said, college football, there's a different aspect to it.
Yeah.
So we were talking, I believe it was after the Augsburg game, and I asked you, how do you play so well? And you told me, if you look at the film, you're not getting touched for the first 5 yards. We're like, when you're running well, your offensive line is blocking for you. And whenever I've watched you play, you're more of a, I'd say more of a shifty back, where you're running around people, getting out of tackles. But there is, I don't know if you remember the play. It was at Concordia.
Oh, I think he remembers.
You're running down. It was the right sideline, probably right around the 30. Some poor defensive back lowers himself to try and tackle you. You put your shoulder into him and just light the guy up. And he's down.
Year?
Yeah, that was this year, a couple weeks ago, up in Concordia.
He does it? You don't remember that one?
No.
You laid the wood on
him. Well, because I was probably a solid 70, 75 yards away on the other side of the field, and I could hear the hit, and you could hear the poor guy kind of lose the air from his lungs and everything. Is it more fun to run around someone, or is it more fun to just level them?
Oh, man.
Some tough questions.
Whatever's going to get us more yards, I guess, right? Yeah. I don't know if I would consider myself necessarily a scat back. I personally think I'm kind of a mix of both. Mm-hmm. So I think it sends a message, right? Especially when you play a team like Concordia, they're known for their defense.
Right, right.
So when you can come in there and be physical as well, they kind of have to sit back on their heels and go, whoa, we didn't expect this.
Yeah, I still can just perfectly hear it, picture it in my mind, that poor dude.
Smack of the pads.
Probably still has a bruise on his chest, probably a little dent in there or something, maybe a couple broken ribs or something. That was a big hit.
Yeah. So Tucker Treadle, I think he hasn't played a game yet. I think he's expected back sometime in November. Is that something you're looking forward to, getting another back in there like Tucker?
Oh, yeah. I love playing with Tucker. We feed off each other so well. Mm-hmm. He's sort of that running back that runs up the middle, big old legs, And I think that we kind of, feed off each other like that, just because I'm sort of the opposite in a sense. Mm-hmm. But no, not only is he a great football player, he's a great person, and we get along very well. And if he does come back this season, I'll be stoked about that. It's always fun playing with him.
What are the benefits of running with a Not usually when you say change of pace back, there's someone who's the feature back, and then someone who comes in on like third downs and is a different style runner. But with you and Tucker, it really is kind of a – both of you are a change of pace to each other, and you both can carry the load, and you can also come in, you know, when the defense is tired, fresh set of legs. What is it like? How does it change the dynamic of the offense, having two backs who can be feature backs but also play so well off of each other?
So in our offense specifically, like we – if we can run the ball, like we will, and every team knows that when we play them. Yeah. So – you know, when you get into the second, third quarter and you have two backs that can keep on rolling in, you see it on the defense, right? Like, they get tired. Mm-hmm. So for us, you know, that just builds up your momentum, builds up, you know, the offense in terms of, you know, continuing to keep on driving. So it's good. You know, I would prefer it over anything else just because, you know, it's a long season. You know, guys get beat up. And, you know, when you can get two guys in there rolling, you know, it's never a bad thing.
Yeah, that'd be huge come playoffs. I got nothing else.
I've got one more question.
Yeah.
On plays, like so against St. John's, you had two touchdowns of at least, it was like 60 or 65 yards. You had the 94-yarder on the first drive, and then I believe in the third quarter, you had another 60-some-yard touchdown run. Is there a moment on a run when you know you're going to break free for the end zone? And what's just running through your head as you're running down the field? You see nothing but green grass ahead of you in the end zone, the beautiful end zone just sitting right there waiting for you.
Oh yeah, it's a weird feeling actually, because you don't necessarily like there's sometimes after games where like you don't remember certain runs just because like your adrenaline, mm-hmm. right? So like if you tell me like what was I thinking at that exact time, I have no idea. Like I don't even remember like seeing like the hole that like you cut into just because you're so locked in at the time. And especially that game. I mean, there's so much going on around you that you're just very focused, but. Definitely once you get into the end zone, you know what happens.
Right, yeah. On that 94-yard run, could you feel the energy just kind of like sucking out of the home crowd? And you could hear the little St. Thomas, you know, student section going crazy. Could
yeah,
you
so
kind of feel that?
Once I got into the end zone, I kind of saw all the St. Thomas people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when you know it's real, you know. And that's what I like about, you know, that game. I mean, you had like the two ends where – not that you don't want to score on the other end, but if you score on your home side, I mean, it's the most electric thing.
The fans were like, there's like there's this barricade, and the fans were like pushing into it. All the students, I thought they were gonna rush the field.
Yeah.
It was awesome, an electric atmosphere.
It's a great time.
So we have a tradition here on Keep Balling to end every interview that we do. We have a producer question where our producer is a running tally, same question for every interview, just kind of a yes or no answer. So we'll let Althea take over here for that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So in the 2014 NFC divisional game, the Packers faced the Cowboys, and we like to ask, did Dez catch it?
Are you familiar with that
yes.
game?
Yes, yeah. He did. Of course he did.
Yes. Thank you.
Another one.
Yeah. I think that's 4-1 now or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
The only person who said no was Matt Mitchell.
Yeah.
Said,
is he a Packers
he
fan
say,
or something?
He's a defensive player. That's why.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We even had
Dowdle.
You know, Mark Dowdle come in, and yeah. Mark said that he caught it. And
Mark's a smart guy.
So we've had, let's see, it's Fritz, Mark, Coach, and now Josh yeah. say yes, and only.
See, Fritz would know. Fritz would know.
Exactly.
He's done it enough.
Yeah, that's what I said.
He knows.
Yeah. Do you know what a catch is at this point?
Does anyone? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I thought it's when you catch the ball, but I guess it's not anymore. Yeah. Who knows?
It's crazy. Yeah. Josh Parks, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
So that was running back Josh Parks. Interesting interview with Josh.
Yeah, I'm in a theology class with Josh right now, and probably the first football player I've really, you know, gotten to know mm-hmm. outside of, you know, Tommy Media interviews. And he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And also it's a fantastic running back. I mean, you don't run for 256 yards on one of the top defenses without being, you know, at least competent in what you do.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's a great guy. The one question I was going to ask him is, how do you get your biceps so massive? Because his biceps are incredibly
that's
large.
That's the thing. He's about 6 foot tall, so not just super huge, but, yeah. I mean, and you and I are about the same height, too,
yeah.
but his arms are freaking enormous.
I said it on the intro. His arm is literally as big as my thigh.
Yeah.
He is Huge. So that was the one question. We'll have to get him back in here.
I was trying to lead in that into that for you, talking about him bowling people over. I know.
I missed it.
Because in terms of like power backs, he's not a large guy. As he said, he's kind of an in-between, but he can still lower the boom on people.
Yeah, I think he's kind of taken on that role too more this year.
Well, particularly with Tucker Treadle out. Yeah. I mean, Josh he's had to bulk up a little bit, and I think Tom Loeffler's kind of taken over the scat back role.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of lowering the... what is it, the truck stick on him?
Laying the truck stick, R3, pushing it on the controller.
No, we're talking Madden 05, C-stick truck stick. Bowling people over. Like that one against Concordia, that is, I keep bringing it up, but that is the clearest memory of any one single play at St. Thomas I have, other than the walk-off touchdown at Concordia 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that hit he laid on that guy.
I'm surprised he didn't remember. I thought for sure he was going to, like, but yeah, he gave a good answer.
Yeah,
makes sense.
And yeah, like with the adrenaline running, you just kind of, at that point it's instinct, and it's kind of cool to see that he's so good at what he does that, you know, he's hitting these holes through the offensive line in split seconds and he's not even thinking about it. It's just like he can sense where it is and he'll run through it. And I mean, with the St. Thomas offensive line, you know, he was saying a couple weeks ago that, you know, he's not getting touched for 4 or 5 yards.
Yep.
So just having that good of an offensive line and then being as good a back as he is, it's kind of cool knowing that not going through the motions, but it's all instinct at that point. And you're not realizing what you're doing until guys are 25 yards in the dust behind you.
Yeah, a really cool perspective from Josh there. And they'll be back in action this weekend against Carleton. They come back home. It's a 1:10 kickoff. Carleton's not a great football team, Noah.
They're not, but... as of right now, Carleton has a longer win streak than the St. Thomas football team.
One in a row?
They're two in a row.
Two in a row.
They've won their last two games.
Okay.
However, they're usually not very tough competition, but as Josh said, you can't take any of these games for granted. It's football. Anything could happen, and who knows? Maybe the momentum shift is all Carleton needs, and they're going to run the table after this and be a dark horse for the playoffs, but... realistically speaking, you never want to take a game for granted, but this is a good time to have a Carleton game.
Yep, it's a good time to work on us. And they'll have that chance at 1 o'clock. Follow along on TommyMedia.com for coverage of that game. And that's all I got, Noah.
Yeah, I think that's all we've got here. For everybody at on the KTBR team, Brady Haldmeier and Althea Larson, I'm Noah Brown, and we'll see you next week.